Chapter 62. The Russians came aboard the Titanic during the storm's lull. Deep down in the bowels of the engine and boiler rooms, Spencer and his pumping crew had no chance, not the least opportunity for any resistance. Their total surprise acknowledged Prevlov's dedication to exact planning and detailed execution. The fight that occurred topside, massacre would have been closer to the truth, was over almost before it began. Five Russian Marines, half the boarding force, their faces all but hidden by seaman caps pulled low on top and with huge mufflers wrapped below, were in the gymnasium with automatic machine pistols ready and aimed before anyone could comprehend what was happening. Woodson was the first to react. He swung from the radio, his eyes widened in a look of recognition, and an expression of pure anger swept over his normally passive face. "You bastard," he blurted, and then hurled himself at the nearest intruder. But a knife materialized in the man's hand, and he deftly rammed it into Woodson's chest, tearing the photographer's heart nearly in two. Woodson clutched at his killer, then slowly slid downward to the booted feet. Shock in his eyes, then disbelief, then pain, and finally the emptiness of death. Dana sat up on her cot and screamed and screamed. It was that stimulus that finally stung the other members of the salvage crew into action. Drummer caught Woodson's murderer on the cheek with his fist and received the barrel of a machine pistol across his face for his effort. Sturgis launched his body in a flying tackle, but his timing was late. A gun butt caught him just above the temple at the same instant he crashed into his intended victim, and they both fell to the deck in a heap, the assailant quickly regaining his feet, while Sturgis lay there as if dead. Giardino was in the act of bringing a wrench down on another Russian skull when there was an ear-splitting crack. A bullet passed through his upraised hand and sent the wrench clattering across the deck. The shot seemed to freeze all movement. Sandicker, Gunn, and Chief Bascom and his men halted in mid-action as they abruptly realized that their unarmed defense of the ship was hopeless in the face of guns held by highly trained killers. At that precise moment, a man strode into the room, his intense gray eyes taking in every detail of the scene. He wasted no more than 3 seconds. 3 seconds and no more was all Andrei Prevlov needed to survey any given situation. He stared down at the still screaming Dana and smiled graciously. "Do you mind, my dear lady?" he said in fluent, idiomatic English. "I think female panic inflicts quite an unnecessary strain on the vocal cords." Her round eyes were stricken. Her mouth closed, and she sat huddled in a ball on the cot, staring at the spreading pool of blood under Omar Woodson and shuddering uncontrollably. "There now, that's much better." Prevlov followed her eyes to Woodson, then to Drummer, who was sitting on the deck in the process of spitting out a tooth, and then to Giardino, who glared back, holding his bleeding hand. "Your resistance was foolish," Prevlov said. "One dead and three injured, and for nothing."
"Who are you?" Sandicker demanded. "By what right do you board this ship and murder my crew?"
"Ah, a pity we must meet under such remote and unpleasant circumstances," Prevlov apologized. "You are, of course, Admiral James Sandicker, are you not?"
"My questions still stand," Sandicker spat angrily.
"My name is of no consequence," Prevlov replied. "The answer to your other question is obvious. I am taking over this ship in the name of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics."
"My government will never stand idly by and let you get away with it."
"Correction," Prevlov murmured. "Your government will stand idly by."
"You underestimate us."
Prevlov shook his head. "Not I, Admiral. I am fully aware of what your countrymen are capable of. I also know they will not start a war over the legitimate boarding of a derelict ship."
"Legitimate boarding?" Sandicker echoed. "The Civil Salvage Service laws define a derelict vessel as one whose crew has abandoned at sea without intent of returning or attempted recovery. Since this ship still retains its crew, your presence, sir, constitutes a blatant act of high seas piracy. Spare me your interpretation of maritime legalities. Trevlov held up a protesting hand. You are quite right, of course, for the moment. The implication was clear.
You wouldn't dare cast us adrift in the middle of a hurricane.
Nothing so mundane, Admiral. Besides, I am well aware that the Titanic is taking on water. I need your salvage engineer, Spencer, I believe his name is, and his crew to keep the pumps operating until the storm abates. After that, you and your people will be provided with a life raft. Your departure will then guarantee our right to salvage.
We cannot be allowed to live to testify, Sandecker said. Your government would never permit that. You know it, and I know it.
Trevlov looked at him, calm, unaffected. Then he turned casually, almost callously, dismissing Sandecker. He spoke in Russian to one of the Marines. The man nodded and tipped over the radio, and pounded it with the stock of his machine pistol into mangled pieces of metal, glass, and wiring.
There is no further use for your operations room,
Trevlov motioned around the gymnasium. I have installed my communication facilities in the main dining room on D-deck. If you and the others will be so kind as to follow me, I will see to your comfort until the weather clears.
One more question, Sandecker said without moving. You owe me that.
Of course, Admiral. Of course.
Where is Dirk Pitt?
I regret to inform you, Prevlov said with ironic sympathy, that Mr. Pitt was in your helicopter when it was swept over the side into the sea. His death must have come quickly.